In continuation of establishing a practice, today I'm going to talk about the more practical steps that one can take in their study and practice of meditation or chanting or any of those aspects. These are important things to keep in mind, you know, and along with just actually being able to accomplish it, to get to doing it and learning to enjoy the meditation and practice, as we had stated before, there are some very important practical steps that I wish to share with everyone in making a regular, well-founded practice. And these may seem very simplistic, however, they're very important. And I wanted to share with you my insight concerning each of them in this podcast. The first being finding a suitable place for your practice. That means creating a sacred space. The next is having a time, a set time that you find. Also, the best posture. That can be very challenging for people, especially we have many different body types and people with different situations and challenges. And cultivating the right attitude. This is essential in having a long-term practice. Without that, our practice is, of course, going to be limited. And, of course, growing that all of those aspects into a strong motivation. And through that strong motivation is where we continue our practice and deepen our practice, which is the most important point of why we do this. Let's begin first with setting a time and place. Again, this may seem very mundane to people. However, this can either make or break a practice. The important thing with consistency is that you try to meditate at the same times every day. If you're just doing a morning practice, you do a morning practice at the same time. If you add an afternoon practice later, try to make sure they're at the same time. And also, there are some other options and information I want to share with you when you're considering what that time is, based on actual teachings and personal experience. So if you do this properly with associating a correct time and place, you'll learn to associate that time and your body will be used to doing meditation at that time, and you're far less likely to procrastinate. Because just in the idea of deciding when to do something is just as challenging as actually doing it. So that can take a lot of drain your mental energy and motivation. So having it already set by choosing a period that doesn't conflict with other activities and obligations, you'll be able to have that energy, that extra energy to do it. And at first you may have to make some adjustments to your daily schedule, but again, that's why it's important, as we were stating before, to understand the essential nature of our practice. And if the same time is very difficult for you to pick due to your work, etc., just pick a place in your normal routine, for an example, before breakfast or after your regular exercise, that you can do it each day. Just make it part of another routine that you've already set aside or that you have fit throughout your day. And again, that may change, but later I'll explain why having a fixed time is essential, because having a fixed period, whether you set your clock or whether you set it by the time of the day or through your daily routines, is the best way to find consistency. And a lot of beginning meditators and practitioners of in practice in general often forget to take their mental energy and clarity into account when picking the time. So you want to, in this idea, and I'll give you some basic core guidelines that we have in the practice of yoga, when you want to, of course, choose a time that you tend to be least agitated or tired. So, you know, saying I'm going to come home after work and do meditation is sometimes challenging because most people want to rest, you know, and everyone has their own natural rhythms. But generally, the best time, of course, in establishing our practice and having it useful throughout the day is in the early morning. Or if we want to see of the bigger picture, at least one before the evening. a lot of people, including myself, prefer the period, you know, just after waking up in the morning. But of course, before breakfast, if you've, which we'll talk about later, but you know, meditating after eating a meal, has its own challenges, such as sleepiness, etc. But the second best to that is, of course, in the late afternoon or early evening. Of course, in the afternoon is usually the hardest because, again, we may be tired. We may not be able to concentrate, etc. And all of the guidelines that I'm going to give you are, of course, for it to be effectual. Because the reason why you're doing this is not just to give yourself another thing to do in your life. I'm sure you don't need that. But to be able to gain benefit from your practice, okay? So again, the easiest way to make time for your practice is by just getting up a little earlier. That does take some time to get used to. You know, the first couple times can be very tiresome. But, you know, having that discipline and sticking with it, you won't regret it. Some people, you know, are morning people, so they feel refreshed and alert. And, of course, the activity in the house and everything is quiet. But, you know, you have to, of course, keep in mind that this will only work if you go to sleep earlier. If you go to sleep late and you're used to that, you're going to lose sleep, which is, again, as we've spoken before, regulating sleep based on your body type and your dosha. You need to know how much sleep you need. And, of course, getting less sleep and doing more things, of course, is not properly regulating one's sleep. But, you know, no matter what time you choose during the day, you'll have to make adjustments to other parts of your life and commitments, etc. And that's just the aspect of doing another thing like meditation. Without doing this and making it a priority, it just won't happen. One aspect that's very important in the time is, as I've spoken before, the most effectual time, according to the sutras and the sastras, is the Brahma Murta, which is about an hour and a half before sunrise. And as we can see, as I stated, if you're going to meditate, please do at the dusk, where the daytime is changing into the evening, not in the evening specifically, if you can avoid it. But these times also have to do with a deeper science within yogic science. And Eastern medicine, that at these times our body is going through some specific changes to adjust to the time of day. And this morning practice of Brahma Murta, which is about an hour and a half, and as you know, it changes and you'll see this in monasteries where they change the time that they sleep a little extra or wake up a little early based on the time of year. So in the fall, because of the nature is more hibernating, they usually sleep an extra hour. In the summer, we don't necessarily need to sleep as much due to the energy, etc. So they may take away an hour. But again, you have to adjust this according to what is best for you, and only you can decide that. Now, with specifically our practice, beginning with shorter meditations, usually as I do an online 15-minute meditation, usually it's 15 to 20 minutes each day, usually for about a week or two. And then you can increase your sessions in 5-minute increments. That's the best way, weekly or every few days. But I would, of course, recommend weekly. Make yourself a schedule. And again, it's not the time that you have to meditate, it's the deepness. Now, according to tradition, it takes about 20 minutes, usually around the 20-minute mark, for people to get into a certain state that aren't professional practitioners. So, you know, you at least want to get between 20 to 30 minutes meditation if you are able each day, until you can reach 45 minutes is usually the max that they recommend. And of course, there are many options for you to use meditation timer rather than watching your watch. There's a lot of apps on your phone you can use, but you don't want to sit there looking at the timer. That'll just distract you. And all you need to do is just listen for the bell. That's the most important. So using the online app or et cetera will be fine, you know. So Some people find it easier to do shorter, instead of having one big meditation, do two shorter meditations, of 20 to 30 minutes each day. This is okay at first, but I really strongly recommend that at least one daily 45-minute sit as a minimum as you have progressed to your maximum practice. And again, it's important to have a meditation teacher. And of course, I give that advice because having somebody who has walked the path is very important. Because you may not think, but there are detrimental things we do thinking that we're improving or enhancing or progressing our practice, but in actuality, they're hindering us. And as you advance through the different stages, you'll gain more skill. Your meditations will become more interesting and enjoyable. And you, of course, eventually have no problem extending to 45 minutes into an hour, practicing more than once a day if you choose. It's always best that you work up gradually. And again, the important thing is not to go in guns blazing. That, as we all know in everything that we do, that is not a wise thing to do. And that is, of course, never leads to a sustained practice. And then once you've chosen a schedule, treat meditation like every other commitment that you have, such as your work or school. Give that the respect that it deserves by spending the designated period meditating and doing nothing else. You have to, many times in your meditation, let go of everything else that you need to do. Even if you have a lot of things pending, you make that time for yourself because you know that you will be able to do whatever you're going to engage in later more mindfully and more patiently. So that is why I always understand the essential and prioritize my practice, because I know whatever I'm doing after it is just going to be enhanced considerably because of my commitment. And so, when you start a meditation practice, if you're, even if you start practicing Buddhism, etc., you may get some resistance from people who want your time, because you'll be unavailable during that. But they'll learn to adjust, and you may even decide to join. They may actually join in with practicing with you. I've seen it happen, by not pushing other people. But again, this is a good opportunity to make boundaries and to have people respect your time. But sometimes, because you won't be available, that may be tough for some people. But again, this is about your awakening. This is about your life. So I think it's essential that when they see the benefit, it'll be quite easy for them to make sure. I'm often reminded by my spouse that I should meditate, if I happen to forget or something like that. But most importantly, remind yourself that meditation is your time, as I've stated. It's your time. It's precious time. It's essential time, especially when you see how it improves all the other aspects of your life. Okay, so consider how much meditation will improve your relationship with others. So therefore, you shouldn't think of it as selfish. I won't allow other people to call it selfish. It's just important. We have our own time, this personal time, which will ultimately benefit everyone you come into contact with. Just keep that in mind. Also, if you have the opportunity, practice with someone else. That's why it's great if somebody else from your family joins you. Their commitment will, of course, support yours. However, if you have clearly established your intention, but your practice partner hasn't, that may cause some distraction. So it's better to have someone who's someone who's sincere and wants to and continue that, has the same direction. And of course, meditation groups, and of course, temple is perfect, that you can go and meet and practice, etc. That's really essential, because practicing on your own, it's very easy to slip into a lot of bad habits, which of course, as we look at chapter 16 in the Lotus Sutra, that the Buddha simply says this practice, all of this is just essentially how to quickly and effectively attain enlightenment in this life. So therefore, we need to have an effective practice. And then finally, as I've stated before, creating a regular place for your meditation is just as important as taking regular time. If you have a place that is not clean or too many distractions, you won't be able to concentrate. So you want to comfortable space where you won't be disturbed. One thing, a couple aspects to keep in mind, that it should be quiet and secluded enough to feel like you're meditating. If there's a lot of noise, it won't support that depth meditation that you need, especially as a beginner. It's difficult. However, if that's not possible, you can also be a space that you use for other things, and then just change it when you're done. But it should be a place where you can keep your meditation cushion and other practice items that you might use. And I have one, and we have it with our shrines as Buddhist in our house, our butsudans, our Buddha's house. We can design and decorate in ways that help us and inspire us, and then remind us that why we're there and what we hope to gain. So all of the spiritual items that I have are all inspirational. And so therefore, when I enter into my meditation space, I feel the energy, the power of practicing. And again, as I said, finding someone to practice with, there you are. You have someone to practice with, all of the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, etc. And as I said, in our practice, we set up an altar. This is called a Butsudan. It's a Buddha's house that can be simplistic or very ornate, etc. But again, in the meditation, I just want you to know, if you call yourself religious or not, it doesn't matter. The purpose of it is to inspire and motivate you in your practice. So however you may design that is up to you, because again, this is for your inspiration. The main aspects that we have in meditation are that it should be a place of cleanliness. So therefore, we should keep it clean. We should make sure our meditation cushions are clean. The clothing that we have is neither tight nor too loose. Also, that it has good air circulation. That's one thing that people may not think about in a practice space, but make sure that it's comfortable. It's not too cold, not too hot. There's some airspace, etc., so that when you're practicing, you can focus on what you need to do. And that's the real purpose of why we create the time and place or space for our practice. Because if we do not, we're kind of, how did you say, we're, and I want to say cheating ourselves, but we need to do as much preparation as we can to get the maximum practice. Because if this is important to us, and we're practicing for an important reason, such as improving ourselves, understanding our Buddha nature, etc., we want to put in the effort, and that everything around it is supporting and manifesting this practice. So I thank everyone. So we'll go on to sitting, the type of posture. But for now, thank you for joining me, and I look forward to our next podcast. Have a wonderful day. Namo myoho renge kyo. Hello, everyone, and welcome again to another Rowdy Buddhist podcast. I hope that you're doing well. I hope that you've been continuing your practice and that you have been making strides. Today, we're going to talk about, as we were talking in the practical steps in practicing meditation, we had talked about the time and place, setting up a specific place for our practice, a specific time. Today, I just want to talk about posture, because actually, this is a aspect that has to and usually is taught by a teacher. Why is this? Why can't you watch a video? There are many attunements, many adjustments that need to be done by someone who is a professional practitioner. Simply what we see in our observation again, what we watch, what we see, we may be missing many, many fine points that can only be attained through practice and study. So that is also the importance of a teacher. Many people nowadays, they go online and purchase a video on how to practice basic meditation or watch it through YouTube. But there are many, many aspects that are missing, because those are the very subtle aspects. And some of the major aspects as well, the misunderstanding, because, there are many ways, even with moving your body, that if you're doing correctly, you can actually injure yourself, especially if you do the same thing over a long period of time. That is something that needs to be kept in mind with posture. Also, the idea that if you're sitting in the incorrect posture, this can change your state of mind as well. As we've discussed before, The mind, the breath, and the body all have to be in this very cohesive state, and proper state in order to have this quietness that allows us to observe our nature through dhyana. So this is one thing I really want people to keep in mind. So this is basically just general information. If you wish, you're always welcome to reach out to me. But again, this is something that should be done in person. You should seek out a practitioner in person that you can either go visit, and you're always welcome to come visit our temple and train with us. But there at least should be a practitioner that you trust and that has the experience that can actually help you with these very important fine points. And there are a lot of them actually in the United States and throughout the world now. However, the other aspect that you want to make sure is that whatever tradition or path that you take, that is the goal that you wish to attain, because each path has different practices. Even though they look the same from the outside, the goal is different. So that is another thing I'd like to just lay down for people, that make sure that the goal of the practitioner or teacher that you're studying with is the same goal as you is what you want. And now when you say that, that means your basic philosophy. I'm not saying what you want to attain, because that's not the goal of Buddhism or the goal of meditation. A lot of people sell it that way of becoming like mindful, etc. But I truly believe that without coming to understand the seer, Drashta, the person inside, we are not really meditating. We're just simply getting some tricks that are given to us by people, and that ultimately should connect us to a spiritual power of some sort that allows us to come to a realization. Okay, so be careful of being sold many promises. The proof's in the pudding with the practitioner, but also that the school or the group that you study with, that their goal is in line with your beliefs and what you wish to attain. If you wish to have attained that connection with Shvara, with the Godhead, or if you want to study and practice Buddhism, is through the school of emptiness, or all the many different types of schools of Buddhism that we have. You need to at least have that understanding, and of course, delve into that. So now on to right posture. So people will say any comfortable position works for meditation as long as it's not so comfy that you fall asleep. But within the actual texts and teachings, there are very specific postures that are recommended. And the reason why is because, again, if there are actually, and Master Chiantai speaks of this, if one has the incorrect posture, can cause disease, because ultimately that would affect your breathing, which can be the cause of disease, and ultimately your mind, which could be the cause of disease. So when I'm saying that, I'm not just saying about disease caused by bacteria. I'm also what they consider to be diseases are losing one's confidence in practice, also the many mental challenges that we have, etc. The manifestation of karma, in which we have to work through our shadow and see how we can integrate that into our life and practice. So, as you can see, there are many, many very important details that need to have you need to have someone who actually has the forthright experience, hence those who have been on the path and can assist you. Okay, there are four basic traditional meditation postures: sitting, standing, walking, and lying down. They all work. But again, depending on which tradition and what goal you're going for, they will focus on one more than the other. In our practice, we have all of them. We use them in different states, but again, some of them are for more advanced practitioners, because concentration and dhyana needs to be there, and they can be very good at helping to deepen that, and then integrate that into our lives. But the other is that it can also, if done improperly, keep us. And again, the important thing is with spiritual practice, like meditation, and that we are able to gain the benefits. That was the Buddha's purpose, efficiently. Okay. So basically, we'll focus on some pointers that can help you find a good position. And this is, of course, I'm just doing this verbally, but as I stated before, you will need a teacher in order to make sure and adjust possibly your posture on a regular basis, actually. So you can meditate sitting in a chair or on a meditation bench or on a floor. The full lotus position, which everyone knows of, with your legs crossed with your feet on top of your knees, provides a very stable position and helps you keep alert, but it is not necessary for success. In the higher levels, I would say, and this is why in our practice, one of the aspects is the physical body. Understanding and integrating and regulating the physical body, that they have this concept of asana. So asana, many people, when you say that word asana, they think of the basic yoga stretches and postures and positions, etc. But it actually means seat, because ultimately all of those practices are for how to be able to sit and have a seat in meditation properly. And actually these designs, these positions that we have are asanas for sitting meditation. So eventually, if one practices all of the limbs of yoga or of practice, one will be able to have the body supple enough, and that's also an important aspect of quieting and regulating the body, that they will be able to sit in such a posture. And again, as I was stating, with full lotus or half lotus, as we'll talk about, very important that you have someone practice with you and teach you, because if you pull your legs in, etc., and you don't go in the direction of your knees, the way your legs actually work, a lot of people rip and actually destroy their legs by sitting in meditation improperly. And that means that there are many potential pitfalls. So therefore, the full lotus position, if you wish to do that, I definitely recommend having a teacher. The same, if you're not as flexible enough to sit in the full lotus, you can, and again, it can cause serious injury. The half lotus position with legs crossed, which is only one foot on top of the opposite knee, is likewise as stable. Yet, too, it is not so easy for many adult Westerners. A lot of times it's in balance because the bottom part of our bodies are not regulated properly. So therefore, we don't have strength in the lower half. That is something that is very important that you develop. Hence, all of the limbs that we have of the limbs need to be understood and taught properly and regulated. And that when we sit in that, a lot of times people have to use cushions. But if you are not flexible enough that your knee can touch the ground, I would not recommend half lotus, okay? The other is that the most popular meditation posture that we see is probably sitting on the floor with a zafu, which is that round Japanese-style cushion that you'll see. Legs crossed with ankles slightly tucked under the opposite thigh or knee. An alternate idea is that both knees and lower legs can be flat on the floor, one in front of the other. This is usually called the Burmese style. This is how they sit in meditation in the Burmese tradition. Also, the low Japanese style meditation benches called seiza benches are often used. That is sitting on your knees, as we see. If sitting on the floor proves difficult, then sit on a regular straight back chair. They say experiment with the different postures before deciding what you prefer. Also, there are many ways to fine tune and position using pads and pillows, lumbar supports, meditation belts or straps, height adjustments, and so on. A lot of these things, as I was taught by my teacher, is that to be able to practice meditation properly, we need to do that through regulating of the body. So the body needs to be pliable and flexible, that we learn in the other aspects of the limbs. The other is that we should try to use not as many devices. As we can see, meditation, Buddhism, has in many ways become a materialistic practice in that big business gets involved. So they want to sell you every little thing you need. But in reality, I remember with my when I first began practice when I was 18 with my teacher in the Chinese Tiantai tradition, he stated not even to use a cushion, but to learn how to sit on the floor because you can't always carry a cushion with you or find something, and that actually a practitioner should be able to meditate anywhere. So that's one thing to keep in mind is to make sure that you don't overdo it with too many gadgets. But regardless of the position that you choose, it's important that there is a little that there is a little physical strain or pain as possible, especially if you're sitting longer. Again, even the idea of sitting longer, if you're sitting longer, you need a teacher, you need a guide. And I say that because actually, as you're doing it, that by sitting longer practices, there are many potential pitfalls, which actually can be more detrimental to your practice than actually just sitting for a short amount of time regulated over a longer period. A lot of people, again, this is a very modern way of thinking, the more is better. That's not always the case. And also doing too much incorrect practice could actually, as I stated, be extremely detrimental. Perhaps even to your health. So that's something to keep in mind. So, and even with the discomforts, by minimizing the discomfort, that is when you get your practice deeper. Okay. So if you're just trying to maintain the posture and your body is not properly regulated and it's not properly taught, besides damaging yourself, your practice is going to be very difficult because you're going to be in pain. So therefore, try to don't aggravate pre-existing injuries. Be aware of that. Also, don't limit yourself in trying to attain a practice that you'll be able to sit on the floor. And that may take time. But again, that is one of the parts of this tradition and study. By observing them, you'll learn how your body and mind will interact. Be patient. As your practice develops, it'll get easier to sit. Eventually, you'll be able to sit for hours without any discomfort. You'll even get up feeling good without any stiffness or numbness. I find that with my sitting, especially as I practice the correct way of sitting, my body automatically assumes the right posture. But again, that is something that was done and taught to me by a teacher that could be able to properly position your body, watch your body. Over the time that your body is learning, okay? This is something that your body is learning and it can take a while. So remain as still as you can during sitting meditation. This is something that I constantly remind people despite any discomfort. But again, you don't want it that you're causing damage by just sitting there, okay? That's not the point of this practice, is to create more damage. It is to remove and release our suffering. So therefore, again, that is something that needs to be regulated by a teacher who can actually see what your body type is, how your body is flexible at that time, give you practices in order to limber up your body so that you can properly regulate it. And then in the meantime, allow your practice to progress. You won't be able to do that on your own. It's very challenging for a beginner not to move, but always wait as long as you can before moving. And then don't stop meditating when you change position. So sometimes I'll adjust, myself, but very small amounts of adjustment. But again, sitting, as we know, with the mind and breath, and the body allows us to enter into dhyana, to samadhi. But rather move slowly and deliberately with full attention to the sensations in your body as you shift. So as I said, if I do adjust myself, it is very minimally. Even myself having a physical problem such as scoliosis, I've had to deal with that because not having a quote straight spine can in fact and in does fact influence and challenge my meditation. Okay, so you'll likely discover that although whatever caused you to move in the first place, such as an itch, disappears over time, and another irritating sensation, possibly even more intense and annoying, will soon take its place. That's the result of mind. That what we're seeing is that this they call a citta vritti, which is like the movements of the mind,
are becoming manifest on our body because we're trying to smooth or regulate them. And when we try to do that, the mind doesn't particularly like it. Even though you may have quieted the mind, it's going to put it on the body. Or if you quieted the body, it'll come through the mind. That is the challenge that we have to move through and see as we practice meditation. So you simply can't overcome all physical discomfort by adjusting your posture. And as I have been taught, is that they talk about it disturbing the waters. So even when you're sitting chanting the sutra or chanting the Odaimoku or sitting meditation, it's very important that we regulate and practice the body, that it becomes supple and able to move properly. And then we keep that. We quiet it so that we can close those veils, that we can then go deeper inside to understand the nature of the seer, okay? Who is being sought? Who is the one witnessing this, you know, beyond what we consider the matter of the mind, body, and breath. So that's very essential, okay? So this is just one aspect that we're talking about, the right posture. Again, I am always available if you have some questions about your practice. But again, I'm going to recommend that if you want to practice sincerely, come practice with me. Come here. Find a good teacher that you can rely on, that their belief is in accordance with yours, with their goal, okay? And that the goal of the tradition is what you wish to attain. They all have different goals. They're all very relevant. But one thing that a lot of people do not do, they generalize everything. So they think meditation is meditation. But actually, there are many styles of meditations and that their purpose and goal is different. So it's very essential to know what your goal is personally. Even if you are a Nichiren Buddhist, make sure you understand what the goal of the practice is. A lot of people don't do that. They just generalize or accept, and that a practice without a goal, even though that goal may change or adjust or something, but that with what you understand in your reality of your life, that it is in harmony with that as much as possible. Now, again, every tradition will challenge you because, again, you want to learn something. So you can't go in there thinking you know everything. That's just not going to work. But you have to understand, at least with your own principles, whatever they may be at this time, that, for instance, the belief system is in harmony with you, okay? And what that means is that if you believe in a Ishvara, a deity, a godhead, and that is your wish to, you know, through kriya or the idea of this interconnection, or that you wish to understand one's own nature, that is important to know what you want out of your practice. And then there are many paths for each of them. Again, as I stated, all relevant, all wonderful, beautiful paths, many mountaintops. But it's important to understand which mountaintop that you want to reach, right? Hence, if you are climbing a mountain, you decide which mountain you want to climb. Therefore, you are able to better prepare. Also, as you go through, it's in harmony with what your goal is. And again, that may change, but that there is not, if you are not interested in or don't believe in this kind of Godhead, etc., and that is not your goal, but you wish to overcome and release yourself from suffering, it's essential to understand that your practice and system that you're using is in harmony with that. And I try to tell people that so that you don't spend time on something that you're not that is not what your ultimate goal is, okay? So just keep that in mind, and I look forward to our next segment. Thank you very much. Namo Myoho Renge Kyo.